Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
Hard-hitting news. Alternative talk radio. Get ready, America, for Deadline Live with your host, Jack Blood. Deadline Live is a daily wrap-up for those too busy in the daily grind to discern and dissect the news. While the so-called mainstream media buries the truth, Jack Blood uncovers it, exposing the lies that our trusted government officials do not want us to know. And now, please welcome Jack Blood.
Exposing the lies, the disinformation, the war propaganda, and the economic warfare that your trusted government officials and their controllers do not want you to know about. Welcome to this live original edition of Deadline Live. I'm your narrator, your radio gun, as always, Jack Blood, reporting for the next 2 hours. We should have a heck of a show for you today. You might get more information from this show than you're paying for, which is nothing, right? The show's free. So it should be, well, free in so many ways, I hope. We'd like to keep it that way. We're going to be talking a lot about the economy and, as I mentioned, economic warfare throughout the program. Also, connections to the economic 9/11, to the 9/11, the physical 9/11 that happened on September 11th, 2001. This is going to be a good show. If I don't muck it up, folks, this is going to be a good show to record and to share with your friends. Joining us in the first hour of the broadcast here in about 10 minutes is Jim Norman. Jim was on the show last month to talk about his new book, The Oil Card. And the subtitle of that book, The Oil Card, is Global Economic Warfare in the 21st Century. He's going to explain what's going on with the economy, and I will, of course, assist in that effort. On a global scale and what that means for Americans, Jim was the senior editor for Forbes magazine for 10 years until 1989. He was with Business Week, including 4 years as the magazine's Houston bureau manager. His blog talks about the oil business, the oil cards, so to speak, the economic warfare being played, how Russia plays into this, how Russia could be getting punished right now. Maybe that is what is behind the sinking and slagging oil prices, although, of course, that particular benefit has not been shared with Americans at the pumps. Jim Norman will come on in about 15 minutes and explain how all of this works to the best of his ability, and he is an expert in the field. And then in the second hour, a good friend of mine for many years, Richard Andrew Grove, will be joining us. Richard nearly got taken out on 9/11 with his associations with Kroll Associates and Marshall McLellan and AIG. He has the documents, he has a lot of the goods on Kroll, AIG, Hank Greenberg, and some of the people, the players right now who are involved in this economic 9/11. Now, funny enough, the same perpetrators, many of them involved in the literal 9/11, are involved now in this economic 9/11, and they are certainly working with the Federal Reserve and others, the Bank of International Settlements, people at the Treasury, to affect the solution for the problem and the reaction that they themselves have created. So you're going to get a lot of information. Richard, I believe, will be filming some of the documents he's going to be talking about during our interview in the second hour, and you'll be able to see those all online for yourself so we can tell you exactly what evidence we have. We're going to be naming names, so we're going to be laying this all out for you on the program today. So I hope you stay tuned, and I hope you have your tape recorders rolling, or you're prepared to share some of this information with your friends, family, coworkers, and people on the street. Today is an ominous day. I don't often work on this day every year. It is kind of almost a sacred day for me. You could read into that anything you like. Put words in my mouth, but go right ahead. Today, September 18th, is the 38th anniversary of the assassination of Jimi Hendrix. Now, why is that news? Well, I'm working today, by the way, because there is so much news, and it is important to get out, and I think Jimmy would approve of that. But growing up in Seattle, I had quite an affinity for Jimi Hendrix, his music, his consciousness, and I really believe it made me the person I am. Now, some of you might be skeptical of that. Some of you might even think that that is unpatriotic of me, I guess. I don't know. But it had a huge effect on me, and I think that it shaped my early years. I think many of you might even agree with that. Growing up in Seattle, my hometown boy, Jimi Hendrix, shaped a lot of my thinking, and hearing songs such as Bold as Love and If Six Was Nine and Stone Free, all songs that talk about the freedom of the individual spirit, the individual consciousness, to obtain even a higher consciousness, which Jimmy certainly did through his music. So when I was a kid growing up, for whatever reason, I just got really into the music, and of course later I got into the culture to my own problematic course set on the ship known as Jack Blood. But of course, it all made me who I am today. So I don't think I would be a freedom fighter today, looking back, if I hadn't had this intimation, this close association with the music and the emotions and the consciousness of Jimi Hendrix. Now, I had a chance back in the day. There used to be a guy named Randy Hansen in Seattle who would do the perfect Jimi Hendrix imitation act. It was so perfect that under certain circumstances, you would believe it was Jimi Hendrix himself. And it was so popular that he was filling giant arenas as if he was Jimi Hendrix. And Jimi's parents and his brothers and sisters and cousins would all come down. And I had an opportunity to meet Al Hendrix and Norma Hendrix, Jimi Hendrix's grandmother, and his family, his cousin Leon, and they invited us over for dinner. Well, we did not take them up on that offer. I thought it would have been maybe a little rude, and they were being a little nice to us, me and my friends, pretty big Jimi Hendrix fans. But my buddy Johnny Toro got a bandana that was given to Jimi Hendrix to his grandmother, and she gave it to my friend Johnny. They were so touched by how much we were influenced and how much we cared about their son and their grandson and the music that he made and how it affected the world. I mean, you could look back and you could think, where would this world be without people like, and not just Jimmy, but people like Jimmy. Alex Constantine has written extensively in his book Operation Chaos and others. There's that word again, Operation Chaos, a CIA operation now invoked by Lush Limbaugh, about Jimi Hendrix. And he goes on to talk about his death and the manager named Michael Jeffries, who claimed at the time he had worked for the intelligence services, and that he also bragged he had close connections with mafia figures. Michael Jeffrey had served in the Middle East and had openly declared that he took part in assassinations and kidnappings. Now, this is Jimmy's manager. According to the investigations of Alex Constantine, Jimi Hendrix was kidnapped at one point by the mafia, and Michael Jeffrey sent a crew in to free him. Very bizarre. Jimmy wasn't fooled for a minute. He knew that Michael Jeffrey had engineered this kidnapping as a way of winning Hendrix's loyalty. And Hendrix was very aware his money was being siphoned. If you follow the money, we'll be doing that on the show today, if you follow the money from the band's performances and recordings and watch it being siphoned out through Cayman Islands accounts, ending up in Rockefeller's Chase Manhattan Bank, you begin to understand some of the drama and the legacy and the pressure that Jimi Hendrix was dealing with when he was alive. He was an artist who just wanted to create art. When Hendrix died, there was a lot of squabbling about the money, and to this day, it has never all been accounted for. And it's very clear why Jeffrey, he had no interest in Hendrix's music. So why is it he'd come into Hendrix's life? That's one of the questions that are all around this. Hendrix depended entirely on Michael Jeffrey for income. He didn't even have any spending money. This Michael Jeffrey pretty much controlled his entire life and in some ways sabotaged his entire career. Of course, some might remember the famous booking where Hendrix opened for the Monkees. So that was all done by Michael Jeffrey's finagling. Jeffrey also tried time and time again to bring Hendrix into mafia circles. Hendrix was aware that the money was being siphoned off and had initiated a court action and was in the midst of that when he died. Others had tried to establish how he died, and it's very difficult because every one of the central witnesses in the case gives a different story about what happened the night Hendrix died, this day ago, 38 years ago today. According to Monica Daneman, the woman who was living with Hendrix at the time, he had some wine and some mild sleeping pills. And then he then went on to allegedly choke on his vomit while being rescued and in the ambulance. Autopsy reports show that there's a very good chance he could have been drowned. And it's notable to say that Hendrix had come out as a militant almost against the Vietnam War and against Nixon just before all this had happened. Long live Jimi Hendrix. Stay tuned.
to mislead anyone. We do know of certain knowledge that he is either in Afghanistan or in some other country or dead.
Thanks for joining us, folks. Deadline Live, Jack Blood. Oh, yeah. Long live Jimi Hendrix. We have some very, very important topics to talk about today. And when we begin to read what was going on with global economic parity and what I really interpret as global economic warfare, listening to what Russia today coming out and saying, maybe even accusing the United States of America, that this is economic world war. I've called it an economic 9/11. I knew that one person, several people I could get, but one person I knew that we just had on last month could really start peeling back the onion for us a little bit of this. His new book is The Oil Card, Global Economic Warfare in the 21st Century. His name is Jim Norman. As I mentioned, he was a senior editor for Forbes magazine for 10 years until 1989. He was with Business Week magazine, including 4 years here in Texas as the magazine's Houston bureau chief. Great book, The Oil Card. We'll start with that. Jim, thanks for joining us back on the show.
Hi, Jack.
You're not supposed to say that, you know. Homeland Security, that could trigger echelon. Hello, Jack, I think is probably a better term to use in this day and age.
You got me on that one. Okay.
You actually also, your critical analysis of Enron accounting and governance issues in mid-2001 helped trigger the SEC investigation, which led to Enron's downfall. Looking around us at the catastrophic circumstances happening and Americans panicking and the TV news screen just filled with all kinds of erroneous information from the so-called experts. What are you getting right away from all of this, Jim?
It's deja vu all over again from the Enron days. You know, when Enron collapsed, everybody did a lot of hand-wringing like this as well. In a way, Enron was like a mini version of American International Group, AIG. It's an amazing time we live in.
Yeah. Well, they
the
vowed
guys
that this
are
would
dropping like flies.
They vowed this would never happen again after Enron and the stockholders were wiped out, and it sent ripple effects throughout the economy. And here we are, one after the other, like dominoes. The big houses are falling. More and more are going to be added every day. I want to get into how this kind of shifts into world and global economics, certainly something we're tied into. I'm seeing comments like the foundations of American capitalism are gone. I mean, these are some pretty drastic terms we're hearing. Let's go to that, but first let's kind of start with oil. That's where you have found your expertise with your book, The Oil Card. The price of oil down now in the 90s. I haven't checked it today. That's about 40% down from where it went just a couple of months ago. The question is, why is this happening? What's behind that, and who stands to gain?
Yeah. Well, let me go back a little ways here. The point of my book was that oil can be and has been used as an economic weapon. Not against us, but by us, really. That's how we broke the Soviet Union in the 1980s, was by driving down the price of oil. We drove it down from like $40 a barrel down to the low teens. We kept it there for like a decade or more till they were bust. Then in the late 90s, about 98 or so, I think, we changed the strategy and decided to move toward a high price strategy on oil to hurt and slow down the growth of the People's Republic of China. And that's when we moved the price up from like $10 a barrel. It hit a peak of 147 and change in July. And I think it was actually starting to have some serious impact on the Chinese economy. But it was right at that point in July that the Ruskies got uppity again. I think they got some money in their pocket. I think they had been tired of having sand kicked in their face. And when this Georgia situation developed, they stupidly, I think, resorted to moving troops in there and thinking that they could treat it like the old Soviet Union. And it has brought a ton of bricks down on their heads, really, because...
You say stupidly, not as if they didn't have a right to defend themselves when there is some aggression against neighbors and the sectionist Ossetia, but stupid in the fact that they stepped in it economically and then they were now maybe receiving that punishment.
Yeah, I mean, they got suckered into a rather extremely counterproductive military adventure for small stakes. And they've reaped the whirlwind here. Because what's happened is the price of oil, after hitting that peak in July, it's come down like $50 a barrel. Now, for the Russians, who export about 4.5 million barrels of crude oil a day, plus a couple of million barrels of refined product, you're talking an impact of about, $80 billion a year just on crude revenues that they've lost. And it's probably, when you add in the product revenues, is probably $120-130 billion a year. These are huge numbers for the Russians. And what you've seen also at the same time, the price of gold peaked right at the same point. Gold has tumbled. It started to come back a little bit, but, you know, gold...
Well, it's up to 900 today. Yeah, it's obviously bouncing back pretty nicely.
Yeah, it's come back a bit. But you got to remember, gold is another... Oil and gold are the two main sources of Russian hard currency earnings. Russia still doesn't manufacture anything that's worth exporting for money, frankly. They're extremely dependent for a hard currency on exporting raw materials, particularly crude oil. And this precipitous drop in the price of crude, I mean, it certainly has nothing to do with fundamental supply and demand factors in the oil market. There's no shortage of crude. There's no great glut of crude. The market is about as stable as it's been. But what has pulled the price down has been a outrush of managed money, U.S. and other Western money mainly, out of the oil futures and other commodities markets. It's just it's like a giant sucking sound. Pulling money out of that market has brought the price down to under $100 a barrel now.
Yeah, kind of like Las Vegas. They changed the odds by betting on various games, and you can control that, as I think most of us know. Also, I would assume that, you know, the fear of high oil prices, people not using as much gas, as much oil, because it was so expensive, bringing the demand way down, not to mention the propaganda about peak oil and environmentalism and all these things, certainly I think would have an effect on the market on a mass scale.
Well, you know, surprisingly, the fundamentals in terms of supply and demand have not changed that much. So physical oil supply and demand, it's about the same. You could have predicted this decline in demand. That's not what brought the price down.
Well, we did actually predict it. I think you did too, Jim. And
sure.
I think we said it would go to 80. That was a little while ago. We've had other people out there saying it would even go to 50. But there is a method to this, and it is global economic warfare, and it's a very dangerous game between the West and Russia. We'll come back with Jim Norman right after this. Stay tuned.
You're listening to GCN, the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
Nobody
Jimi Hendrix all along the watchtower. Bob Dylan's grandmother, Mitch Mitchell on drums. Thanks for joining us, folks. Jim Norman with us. His book is The Oil Card. Global economic warfare in the 21st century, something we all need to understand. Many of you have heard John Perkins' work, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, where they outline exactly how some of this is done around the world on a variety of levels, both small and large. Or you've read Greg Palast's book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and read Joseph Stiglitz's reports, former chief economist of the World Bank, and how we can go in and crush, use the IMF and the World Bank and these giant lending associations to crush small countries and steal their resources. This happens every day. And we as Americans need to understand it, we need to know it, and if necessary, we need to stop it. I'm all American, I'm 100% for American prosperity, but not with the collateral damage we seem to get with this global economic warfare, which leads to global economic parity, which I think is part of, you know, what we're having to deal with now. Jim Norman with us, The Oil Card is the book. You can call and get that at 800-556-2012. That's published by the great Chris Milligan, who did Fleshing Out Skull and Bones, Trine Day Publishing, good sponsor on our broadcast. 800-556-2012 or bravenewbookstore.com. I'm sure they're carrying it as well. Go check there first, please. Jim, we left off kind of talking about if the market was just allowed to work with the supply and demand and, you know, work the way it's supposed to work in a pseudo-capitalist society, we wouldn't see a lot of the weird fluxes and shifts that we're seeing. But it's because these people are going in and tampering with it that we're seeing some very bizarre occurrences and problems.
That's right. I mean, if oil were left to its own natural course, all commodities actually tend toward glut. They tend to fall to the price, which is the marginal cost of production. And in the case of oil, crude oil, it's probably like $20 a barrel. I mean, there is no good, sound economic reason for the huge price run-up, and there's no other particular reason for it to suddenly plunge this way either. What will surprise a lot of people is the idea that the U.S. national security establishment and our allies together can control the price of even a global fungible commodity like oil. And it's not that hard, actually. We've done it before. As I said, we did it against the Russians in the 80s. All you need really is the cooperation of the Saudis, who, like it or not, they do march in step with what we want them to do, and they do it for their own survival. Secondly, the behavior of the major international oil companies. If you carefully look at their reinvestment patterns, they were hugely reinvesting in the 80s to produce more oil when the world really didn't need it. Now, when the world seems to need it, they're sitting on their hands not reinvesting these huge mountains of cash. It's not that the Earth's crust is running out of oil. It's merely a function of the amount of effort you want to put into getting it out of the ground. And the way to control prices in the past has always been to basically keep enough of the stuff in the ground so it doesn't trash the price structure.
Which is what Greg Palast said in, I believe, his second book, Armed Madhouse. He had shown the documents that, in fact, a lot of the reasons we went to Iraq was to keep the oil in the ground and not to pump it out over to Dick Cheney's house, but to keep it in the ground to, again, affect the world and global economy.
And beyond that, what I note in the book is that the immediate issue, I think, which precipitated that war was the fact that Saddam had been doing deals with the Chinese that would have let the Chinese garrison several large undeveloped fields there. And once you get Chinese boots on the ground in Iraq, you'd never get them out of there. I mean, it would be Sudan all over again with a vengeance. So, again.
Or Iran today.
Well, exactly. Now, Iran is an interesting case because they have done deals with the Chinese. The Chinese have now gone in there on a multi-billion-dollar redevelopment of what's called the Yadavan field, which would produce a significant amount of oil under what's called a buyback arrangement. Technically, the Chinese wouldn't own the oil, but it's the next best thing. And I think that Iran walks a very fine line by inviting the Chinese, again, on the ground there. You know, there's close defense relationships with between Iran and China. In fact, Iran is one of the few real friends China's got out there. That's why I think we're picking on them big time.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I should tell my audience, you also were cited by Paul Volcker, UN Independent Inquiry Committee for the oil for food kickbacks and money laundering. That is in your book, The Oil Card, as well as many documents and a lot of evidence proving what we are asserting today. Now, can Russia... I want to get into this a little bit more, and I want to talk about global economic warfare, you know, aside from oil, and how that can all maybe play out and maybe be tied to this. Can Russia, you know, turn off the spigots and somehow put the price of oil back up? Can they fight back in this global economic playground?
Well, they don't have a lot of cards to play. And here's what's happened. Russia, they used to export like 6 million barrels a day. They're like 4.5 million now. They could be exporting a lot more, but since 2003, they actually signed an agreement, which we encourage, with the Saudis to basically limit their production and divvy up the market. Russian exports since 2003 have bumped along flat at roughly half the level of Saudi exports. This is not a coincidence. This is a deal they signed. They actually held a press conference and announced it. The Crown Prince went to Moscow. They cut a deal to basically control the market at that point. And I think they did it with our encouragement because in order to run the price up, you have to basically control the physical supply. You don't want surplus barrels sloshing around looking for a home because that makes it impossible to really run the price up. But once you just snug up the physical market for crude, as they did, then you can run the market to the moon just by channeling investment funds into the futures market, which is what we did. And you saw a huge flood of pension, other managed money into the rather small oil futures market that just drove the price to the moon. And it drove up the price of corn, wheat, soybeans, all kinds of other stuff because this money was pouring into so-called commodity index investments.
And all of this seems to be kind of under the pyramid of these international oil companies in many ways who have funded the environmentalists who they say are stopping them from creating more refineries, which would put more surplus barrels out there on the market. I mean, they were refining the ethanol or a good portion of that. So again, subsidizing and pushing their lobbyists for subsidies by the American people, we the people, for that as well. I mean, when you put all this together, Jim, it looks like we, the consumers here, are getting a pretty raw deal.
Well, I look at it somewhat differently. Yes, at the end of the day, the consumer always gets whipsawed on this stuff. But you have to consider what's the alternative. If the alternative were, if the alternative to economic war was real war, I think people would pay a lot more at the pump to avoid watching body bags coming home. So, I mean, there's trade-offs here. I think there are people.
Jim, I hate to remind you this, but we're in several wars right now, and body bags are coming home.
Yeah, but not as many as it would be otherwise. I mean, if the Chinese had gained a foothold in Iraq, you'd be counting a lot more zeros on the numbers of the casualties here. I mean, you'd be up to your eyeballs.
So this is the lesser of two evils,
exactly.
In your opinion.
And I, this is how I think the people in Washington rationalize this stuff. You know, they are convinced, I'm sure, they're doing the public good here by waging what amounts to bloodless warfare.
Well, this floats into other parts of the economy. When we come back, I want to just have you break down why oil, when it was at $90 a barrel, I think a year ago, we were paying $2.60 at the pump per gallon for gas. It's $3.60 now. We have not seen any kind of effect from the drop of the price of barrel per oil, so I'd like to find out about that, and then we'll get into the economy and economic warfare and how that might be being used against our enemies as well. Stay tuned, folks. Jim Norman with us.
I believe what I said yesterday. I don't know what I said, but I know what I think. And I assume it's what I said.
Anger, he smiles towering, shiny metallic purple armor. Queen jealousy energy waits behind him. Her fiery green gown sneers at the grassy ground. Blue are the life-giving waters taken for granted. They quietly understand. Once happy turquoise diamonds lay opposite ready, but wonder why the fight is on. But they're all bonus love. They're all bonus love. They're all bonus love. Just as the axis.
Yeah, he knows everything. We are bold as love, and course, being bold brings mighty forces to our aid, and that is something I believe and I live for. Thanks for joining us, folks. Deadline Live, I'm Jack Blood. Jim Norman is with us on the program again today. His book is The Oil Car, Global Economic Warfare in the 21st Century. You can get that at Trine Day Books. Their number again, 800-556-2012, 800-556-2012. Please look for it first at bravenewbookstore.com, our sponsor. And if you guys are listening, you should get this book, and people should all get it and read it. Very important, a key component to understanding what's going on in the world with energy and with money. Jim, a bunch of questions here, but before I forget, McCain came out and said that Sarah Palin is the world's or the country's greatest expert on energy. You agree with that?
Well, I doubt that seriously, but it's an election year. People say a lot of strange things.
Well, and people believe a lot of strange things, which is kind of the problem. Let's go back then to, well, I'll take that as a no, obviously. She'd like to think she's the world's greatest expert on energy, and it's certainly a... makes a good campaign slogan, but beyond that, no, it isn't reality, I think, is what Jim is saying, and I would agree. Why not getting cheaper gas? So oil going down roughly 40% over the last few months. People are sitting at the pump, shrugging their shoulders, going, where's my end? When do I get cut in here? What's happening?
Yeah, well, as Keynes would say, prices are inflexible downward. Once they get up there, they don't come down very rapidly. Actually, what was happening is a lot of refiners were losing their shirts at very high crude prices because they weren't actually passing through the full cost. And so...
So we're making up the difference kinda, now.
Yeah.
Do you expect prices to come down anytime soon? I mean, well, here we are heading into winter. People are going to be buying oil to heat their homes. It could be catastrophic with the economy the way it is. Can they hope that maybe this will start reflecting at the pump or at the oil canister?
I would tell people to don't expect that. But a lot of it depends on behavior of the Russians. You know, if the Russians continue this rather belligerent course that they set out on here in July and before, you could see prices crater. I mean, they could go down back to $50, $40, $30 a barrel again and really hurt the Russians, although I think the Russians are starting to get the message here. I mean, Their banking system is all of a sudden locked up, huge capital outflows. Their stock market is shut for the second straight day. That's after it's plunged like 60% in a matter of a couple of months. The Russians are getting their butts kicked from this thing. And it's, I think they're starting to get the message here that, in fact, in Condoleezza Rice's speech today, she took out after him in, not very nice terms. Basically said, you know, you guys are turning yourselves into economic, non-entities here. I mean, they basically destroyed their chances of getting into the World Trade Organization.
Financial nuclear attack.
But there's no fingerprints anywhere. I mean, there's no sign that the U.S. did anything to them economically. It's just like all this stuff just kind of happened. Oops, the oil price just cratered on them. Oops, the gold price fell. Oops, all of the capital is flowing out of their country. And you could say, well, that's the Russians' own fault because they've you know, treated businessmen so shabbily there. They've expropriated companies left and right. It's still a kleptocracy in a rather corrupt dictatorial state. So they've shot themselves in the foot multiple times. They've driven away capital when they really need it. And here's the point. Russia really needs to realize who its real enemy is. It's not the United States. The real security threat to the Russians is China. China still has significant territorial claims on Siberia. And China has the power now to just go take it. And the Russians can't really stop them. In fact, the Chinese had to have been laughing when they saw these decrepit old T-72 tanks rolling into Georgia. You know, this is the best the Russian army can muster for an attack, a serious attack. We're home free, the Chinese would say.
All of this looks very much, like if Zbigniew Brzezinski was wishing for something for Christmas besides Obama getting in and Soros taking control or whatever, I mean, this is exactly what he would want. It makes you wonder how much of this is really engineered. Now, I have a story here from Bloomberg. Morgan Stanley said to be in talks with China's CIC, allegedly maybe buying 50% of Morgan Stanley. which kind of flies in the face of some of the economic fears we might have about China. Can you explain that briefly?
Well, I would say won't happen. Won't happen. In fact, you know, I think the reason that Bear Stearns was collapsed and disappeared overnight on a weekend was because Bear Stearns was desperate for capital. They were in talks with the Chinese CITIC to take what had been a minority stake there, but would rapidly have become could have been a majority stake as Bear Stearns' equity was disappearing. And I think that rather than allow Chinese ownership of a major Wall Street bank, the Fed and the Treasury just stepped in and said, no, it's going to go to was it Morgan Stanley or J.P. Morgan bought them, I guess. The press release they put out afterwards was rather cryptic. It's not that there weren't other bidders for Bear. It's just that J.P. Morgan was deemed to be the most appropriate buyer for them. So where the Chinese go, they might be used as a foil to get the bidding up, but they're not going to win any of these entities.
So it's all kind of an illusion. They're putting this out there in order to create a call and response, attention and release, so to speak, to further affect the prices in other markets and the investments.
Yeah, to try and get the bid up from Wachovia, which is also rumored. Right. And there's a bunch of other U.S. banks that would step in to take Morgan Stanley. But the trouble is just about all these Wall Street houses are functionally unworkable because what they have is a huge pile of long-term assets of questionable value, which they've been funding with very short-term, overnight, cheap money, which ain't so cheap anymore if it's even available. So they're locked up in a huge credit impasse, which they've created for themselves. I mean, this is finance 101. You match your liabilities to your assets. And they got greedy and decided not to do that because they thought they were invincible. A bank or the SNLs could sort of do that because they have a government guarantee behind them and access to the Fed window to borrow funds. These big Wall Street houses really don't. And that's why you could have them implode overnight the way they have. That's why Merrill Lynch had to sell out the Bank of America. The financial regulators have allowed this situation to just get completely out of hand, and they're paying for it now.
Well, and then the solution is more regulation, and that brings us to the blueprint for a modernized financial regulatory system coming out of the Treasury, which actually regulates everything now, including credit unions and small banking and loaning enterprises and community entities, which I think should be self-sufficient and not regulated by the federal government in such a way. So when they say we blew it, we should have regulated more, it certainly opens the door to a lot more regulation by the government over our communities, which I never see as a good thing, Jim. And you'd have to know more about me to know exactly where I stand. We got about a minute or less here. Give us, you said on the phone with me last night, well, business will go on, Jack, and I happen to agree with that. But give us your forecast going through the next maybe 6 months. What can happen in the financial markets, and maybe what can we look for? If you can just break that down quickly.
Well, I think there'll be acute credit issues all over the place. The government will have to pump lots more liquidity into the system. Here's the way to think about this regulatory thing, though. In the world of economic warfare that we live in now, the locus of power shifts from the Pentagon to the Treasury Department. And it's Henry Paulson is the head of what's called the President's Working Group on Financial Markets, which is nicknamed the Plunge Protection Team. Exactly. Neither the Treasury nor the Fed had any regulatory supervision over AIG. And yet both of them came together and collapsed that thing and forced this rescue upon AIG. So the boundary lines of regulation are almost meaningless now. And what you've got now is this Plunge Protection Team function, what amounts to the Joint Chiefs of Staff for Economic Warfare.
Well, my audience feels much better knowing that the Treasury and the DOD is so influential on our economy. And we kind of all know that what that means. We're going to be talking about AIG a lot in the second hour. Jim will have to go. His book, again, is The Oil Card. Go get it, 800-556-2012. Thank you, Jim, for joining us.
Hard-hitting news. Alternative talk radio. Get ready, America, for Deadline Live with your host, Jack Blood. Deadline Live is a daily wrap-up for those too busy in the daily grind to discern and dissect the news. While the so-called mainstream media buries the truth, Jack Blood uncovers it, exposing the lies that our trusted government officials do not want us to know. And now, please welcome Jack Blood.
We are locked and loaded for the information war and the economic war. Thanks for joining us. Second hour of Deadline Live coming your way this 18th day of September 2008. I'm Jack Blood, your narrator, your radio gun, reporting for the next hour. We're on the air Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. More information about how to listen to the show, go to gcnlive.com or jackblood.com or deadlinelive.info or jackbloodforum.com or myspace/jackblood. Joining us in the second hour is Richard Andrew Grove. He has just an amazing story of where he was on 9/11, who he was involved with, what he found himself in. In 1999, as his great film, A Film to End All Wars, kind of dictates, he went out to New York to seek his fortune. He made his first million by 30 years old, and then he had an epiphany. He was nearly taken out that day at 9/11. Marsh & McLellan was the company I believe he worked for. I believe also a subsidiary of Kroll, a subsidiary of AIG. He was right in that infrastructure, has documents and evidence to show the involvement of AIG and their subsidiaries in 9/11, as well as this latest economic 9/11. His website is 8thestate.com. You can also say it 8thestate.com. It's a multimedia adventure. And Richard, the reason I love him so much, he's not only a great whistleblower and a great person and just does some excellent work, but he's also a fellow artist. Richard, thanks for joining us on the show today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jack. Thanks for inviting me back.
I know you don't do a lot of interviews, and we're one of the few shows that you will appear on. You just have a mountain of evidence. If anyone out there has seen Who Killed John O'Neill, a lot of the stuff you see in that fictional account where they lay out the flow charts and the blueprint involving Hank Greenberg and AIG and really lay out and name names about what happened financially 9/11 as they begin to follow the money trail came from people like Richard Grove, a great, great film. People need to watch that again because it's just become very, very relevant with the so-called tipping over of AIG bailing out by the Fed, which we should remind you is not a government agency. It is a private company. This would be a good time to teach your friends and your family that particular issue as they're flooding the market with money and bailing out allegedly people like AIG. Richard, quickly tell my listeners kind of your story in just a couple of minutes. Kind of give us the bullet points and how you begin to open up this can of worms.
Sure. The short and sweet summary, if you will, would be I was working in a enterprise software company, which meant that my clients were the world's leading financial institutions. And before they can do anything action-wise in the world, they have to build software projects behind the scenes to facilitate the flow of data and information. So what I did was, you know, I was involved in sales, and I was involved with clients like AIG and Marsh & McLennan and Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch and all these companies, Deutsche Bank. These were all clients of mine. And so before they go out and do anything, they come out with plans for software, and then we bid on how much the software is going to cost them. And then they actually build these projects. Well, on the behind the scenes, I was involved in AIG and Marsh & McLennan building some projects which were eventually used to defraud their clients of hundreds of billions of dollars. Now, I didn't understand the machinations at the time. The reason I found out is because I was being paid very large commission checks. And when you're counting on that money every month and you're getting paid a wrong amount, that was all I needed to kind of raise my head and say, hey, what's going on? I'm not being paid correctly. And after I asked these questions, the next day, the VP of sales flew in and fired me on the spot. And I had closed the largest deal in company history, and Marsh & McLennan and AIG were our largest client. And all this stuff was going on, but I didn't really realize it at the time. That was June of 2001. In August of 2001, my ex-employer came back to me and bribed me and offered me an extension in healthcare, which I needed because I had just gotten out of the hospital. And so I took the bribe, and I signed this contract, and the only binding thing was they don't want me to talk about what I did. And I thought, well, who cares? Nobody gets what we did there anyway. It doesn't matter. Well, a couple days later, 9/11 happens, and before 9/11 had happened, I thought to myself, you know, people don't give you money for nothing. So I contacted some friends of mine at Marsh, and in a return phone call through a voicemail, I was directed to go to the World Trade Center on the morning of 9/11 to deliver the documents and evidence that I had to the 96th floor, and that's where the explosion occurred. So I was actually sitting in traffic in a Porsche Cabriolet with the top down, and, you know, I witnessed the events. And it wasn't until about a month later that I caught on to some of the money laundering aspects and the coincidences that couldn't have been done, you know, by Muslim hijackers. And when you take these insider trades on American Airlines and Marsh and McLennan, and they track back to the CIA, and they track back to Deutsche Bank, which was the first client we installed this special software, this internet portal where they could do all sorts of things behind the scenes as far as information transactions that they could never do before. So in a short story, that's kind of how I came to be involved.
Well, I want to underscore, because they destroyed a lot of evidence that day, both at the Pentagon and Building 7 and the World Trade Center towers. A lot of crucial evidence to show malfeasance, money laundering, et cetera,
sure,
was all destroyed. And they tried to destroy you and your evidence by dictating you up. Again, keeping in mind they had prior knowledge that the towers would come down, and they wanted our guest, Richard Grove, to go up to the 96th floor to bring all of his evidence and to... I should laugh, but I mean, it's just amazing that they thought they could get away with this. And it was just fortuitous, a chance of luck. You got stuck in traffic, that you weren't up there in that tower and were killed that day along with your evidence.
Right, because Enron started, I think, September 6th, and a bunch of the Enron records were in World Trade Center 7 and in the World Trade Center. There's all sorts of things going on with that. And I think that, you know, the person who, you know, inadvertently or purposely directed me to go to the building that day in researching what he's done since, he's in a partnership with a Council on Foreign Relations member. So, you know, when Silverstein's getting warnings from, you know, possibly the Mossad or other CFR members who are in the know, and Marsh and AIG are run by a father and son team who are both in the Council on Foreign Relations, and the father, Hank, who runs AIG, was the chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations and the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank. And then right after 9/11, Marsh and AIG got busted for their insurance scheme. So Spitzer goes in and investigates. And there's a whole, it goes really deep from there. But the summary is that Hank Greenberg had to leave AIG, and so that's what I think is going on right now. He's making a move through the Fed, using it as a proxy to retake over his company at a fraction of the cost.
You see, isn't something you're going to hear on the news, folks, every day. Can you get into, we got about 2 minutes left in this segment, and we're going to be talking about this, folks, for the entire hour with our guest, Richard Andrew Grove. Can you elaborate on that? So Hank Greenberg, Maurice Hank, they call him Hank Greenberg. It's... not the baseball player, but, you know.
Well, that's why he took it. He named himself Hank after the famous baseball player. His name's Maurice Greenberg. He had a history in the U.S. Signal Corps, which became the NSA. He has very close ties to the OSS and CIA. He's worked with Wild Bill Donovan back in the day before it was the CIA. One of the co-founders of the CIA, his son, is on the board of directors of AIG and Kroll Associates, and Kroll Associates did security at the World Trade Center on September 11th. And has an affiliation with John O'Neill and his death, and there's all sorts of things. But let me just back it up a second and just say that, you know, it starts out, AIG started out with Cornelius V. Starr, who also worked with Wild Bill Donovan. And Cornelius V. Starr is related to Kenneth Starr, who put Bill Clinton on trial. So that whole misdirection about a blowjob while Kosovo and all these other, Milosevic, all these things are going on, we have to just understand that, you know, they basically try their own people using their own people, so there's never any unknown risk in what's going to happen. It's all, like, theatrical.
Greenberg was deputy chairman of the New York Federal Reserve, 92 and 93, New York's Federal Reserve chairman from 94 to 95, and then he went to AIG, American International Group, which is much bigger than a insurance company. It is also... been known as many other things, and it does a lot of its business overseas, which means if we're allegedly bailing out AIG, we're bailing them out to do business, not even here in our own shores where we can benefit from it. He became co-owner, Hank Greenberg, of the private spy agency Kroll Associates. But this is an interesting development, and so we'll come back. I want to talk more about who this is, how AIG was involved in 9/11, how that Hank Greenberg could be at the pinnacle of this financial 9/11, how, as Richard intimates, that potentially he could be doing a covert backdoor action to regain his company that he was forced to resign from after the SEC began investigating them after 9/11. Stay tuned. Richard Andrew Grove with us, 8thestate.com. I'm Jack Blood.
And now, back to Deadline Live with your narrator, Jack Blood.
For my guest, Richard Andrew Grove. Here it is.
White collar conservative flashing down the street, pointing their plastic finger at me. Don't pursue my kind of drop and dive. I'm gonna wave my freak flag.
Wave your freak flags high today, folks. Thank you for joining us, Deadline Live. And of course, Jimi Hendrix, it is the anniversary of his death today, September 18, 2008. Richard Andrew Grove with us from 8thestate.com or 8thestate.com. You can just Google him and find that right away. A lot of good stuff there, including how to use hemp for energy, how to stop the war. He also supports the Iraqi Vets Against the War. Adam Kokesh on the program with us tomorrow, part of that group. And a lot of the fundraising he does goes to the IVAW as well as the Feel Good Foundation. So certainly, Richard, it can be said your heart is certainly in the right place, and you are a truth teller, my friend.
Well, thanks, Jack. That means a lot coming from you.
All right, let's pick up where we left off. You kind of dropped a bombshell, and that's why I wanted to have you on. And I'm reading things a lot of the same ways you are. Hank Greenberg using the Fed to retake his company, AIG. Any elaboration, any evidence, any documentation you can throw behind that and let us know exactly why you think that would be appreciated. Go ahead.
That would have been good for me to print it out, right? I do have it, and I'm going to post it on the website along with this video in the next 24 hours. But what it posits is this. When Hank Greenberg got displaced out of his own AIG, he then became chairman. He fell back to be chairman of something called the Star Foundation and something called SICO, the Star Investment Company. And so when you go into what these entities do, it brings what AIG does into context, because AIG, for instance, at one time at least in the recent history, had more private airliners than any other corporation out there. So they had their own private fleet of airlines, like the largest private fleet outside of the military. And so the question is, what does AIG do? What is the nature of insurance? What is the nature of reinsurance? And as some people...
You mean protection money, right? But go ahead.
Right, sure. Protection money, there's where you bring in Kroll, because Kroll does kidnap and ransom protection and these sort of policies that are held by top CEOs and covered by AIG. They actually use Kroll as the operator, the actionary that goes in and rescues these executives who were held hostage for money and whatnot. So, you know, you have that aspect of the insurance. And then when you get into the reinsurance, really, along with software, that is a prime vehicle and a plausible place where you can launder large amounts of money, because you're dealing with all this fluff, and there's not much solidness there. So it's a huge area. And so where you back up a step and you say, what was Marsh & McLennan? They're the world's largest insurance brokerage. They own reinsurance brokers. They own insurance companies. They're partnered father and son with AIG. And Hank's other son, Evan, ran ACE Insurance. So you've got his family in control of these three insurance companies. And then as a result of 9/11, what happens? Premiums go sky high, right? And at the same time, AIG and Marsh are caught cheating their customers out of hundreds of billions of dollars. And, you know, when Spitzer investigates, I mean, that's a whole other story, because you have to understand where Elliot Spitzer came from. He was a rich kid whose dad was much like the Donald Trump of his time. Spitzer, financed his own campaign partially, But the other guy who helped Spitzer finance his campaign and get into politics was a guy named Michael Cherkasky. Now, Michael Cherkasky was the CEO of Kroll, and when Spitzer investigates Marsh and AIG, and Kroll is part of that group, AIG sells Kroll to Marsh, and Cherkasky, the guy who brought Spitzer into the politics game, becomes the CEO at Marsh, making it very hard for Spitzer to do an investigation. And at the same time, Spitzer is claiming to do an investigation into 9/11, but he never connects all the, he never connects all the dots. Now, it's not my job to speculate why he doesn't connect the dots. It's just to notice the fact that you've got AIG and Blackstone involved with financing the World Trade Center, security of the World Trade Center. Marsha McLennan is not only involved with their stock put options the week before 9/11, along with American Airlines. But Marsh gets hit in the attacks, and Marsh lost 320 people. And then the CEO of Marsh Risk is L. Paul Bremer. And L. Paul Bremer went over to Iraq and was overseeing,
the governor of Iraq, yeah.
Right. Hundreds of billions of dollars again.
And he's the one that, of course, broke up the military, and that, of course, precipitated in the sectarian violence. And then, of course, we can get into P2OG and some of these other operations. But
right.
How the plot thickens. Go ahead.
Well, so you have all these things, and they're kind of unnoticed both by the 9/11 community as well as the traditional news community. The traditional news community is running stories on Spitzer and why he can't crack AIG and Marsh and, what's going on there. And Spitzer's own account says, that the people at Marsh put on black hats, meaning that they weren't willing to share investigation information. They weren't willing to share information freely with the Attorney General. And Spitzer in his article says, I can't figure out why they would do that. Well, I know why they would do that, because there was a lot more to be seen except beyond this little $100 million or $100 billion fraud or whatever that's going on. There was 9/11.
I want to ask you, exactly. We're going to get to that during the show as well. I have to ask you this. You got Kukowski now heading Kroll, the financier and the backer of Elliot Spitzer. Kroll, known as the CIA of Wall Street. Also, companies hire them for corporate espionage. It makes you wonder if Spitzer was thrown a few bones. I mean, this is how the mafia and the FBI, work together with informants. They give you a few tips, you leave them alone, one of those deals. And it makes you wonder if Spitzer and some of the targets were provided by Kroll and their corporate espionage in order to keep him fat and happy, and maybe he just got a little too big for his own head, and they had to finish him off with the prostitution allegations. It seems all rather convenient.
That's actually very interesting, because the night that right before he was busted, Spitzer penned an article for the Washington Post. And this article, you can look it up. I'll put it up on the website as well. But this article basically cracks down on how the government's bailing out all these predatory corporations and all these predatory lenders when they should be letting them go out of business. And as soon as Spitzer prints that article, then he gets hit with the media.
Hold on to that, because we're having trouble hearing you over the music. Let's come back. We'll pick up with Spitzer.
Right on.
That is Richard Andrew Grove with us on the program today, 8estate.com. You can go there and check out a lot of this information for yourself. We'll be going into 9/11 and now the economic 9/11 and the fallout from all of that. Problem, reaction, solution. Deadline Live, I'm Jack Blood. Stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
You never know around here. Thanks for listening to the GCN Radio Network. I'm Jack Blood, your narrator, your radio gun. You're listening to Deadline Live. On the program with us, Richard Andrew Grove from 8thestate.com. Richard also has some events that we want to promote before he gets done here. But we are right in the middle of a furious connecting the dots, following the money, painting the picture, putting the puzzle together, linking 9/11 with the events today, the economic 9/11, the problems, the reactions, the solutions, the evidence. We're naming names I would assume, Richard, that Mr. Greenberg isn't too happy with us right now.
Before he wouldn't be happy with us, he'd have to be unhappy with, like, Peter Dale Scott, a professor of University of Southern California, or guys like Jerry Mazza, who's written several great articles exposing, you know, in literary terms, here's the evidence, here's the links, you know, read through it. You know, so it's not just us who's talking about this out there.
Yeah, I just get a little nervous that I might get a visit from Kroll. Let's go back to Elliot Spitzer. We cut you off there at the end, and I want to make sure people heard what you said. And then let's ask, you know, what happens to Kroll with this reshuffling of the financial deck and the bailout of the Fed and who might control it. But let's go back to Spitzer and finish that up.
All right. So as we mentioned, Spitzer's in the motions of making an investigation. You know, AIG and Marsh counter by putting a guy who Spitzer has to basically acquiesce to. And so that whole investigation is a sham. And because of Spitzer and, you know, it was him and Rudy Giuliani and Patrick Fitzgerald and all these guys worked under New York City District Attorney Robert Morgenthau, who has been the District Attorney of New York since the French Connection. And there, you know, therein you sort of have a group of people who learned that, yeah, there's drugs being traded and there's mob people involved. So they fake prosecute the mob. In essence, they do a merger. They merge with the mob, and when they say they dismantled the mob, and that's what Giuliani's credited for, his dad was in the mob. And so when you understand the drugs are still coming in greater numbers, and that, you know, the United States economy is laundering approximately $1 trillion through the stock market, and, you know, my second ordeal as a whistleblower when I tried to go back to work, I wanted to sell a piece of software that allowed companies to keep themselves from being taken advantage and, you know, all these financial disgraces like Tyco and all that stuff could be avoided. And I was actually selling software that was supposed to prevent money laundering and then discovered that that software had a back door in it, that the SEC was approving of it. And then magically you have a mechanism to launder $1 trillion through companies without them even knowing it, because it's all being done technologically behind the scenes, which puts all these companies at risk, not just AIG and Lehman Brothers. I mean,
I mean, that just underscores what we say on this program, that security is an illusion. There is no such thing as security, and there's always a way around it, especially when the very people who are using it or could be affected by it, could be taken down by it, are the very people that are creating it and controlling it and paying for it. Going back to Spitzer real quick, I think another point we need to make, knowing his connections to Kroll and their connections to AIG, again, alleged perpetrators involved with 9/11 financially and otherwise, in the security apparatus. I don't think it's too big of a stretch of imagination why the Attorney General, Elliot Spitzer, did not investigate 9/11 as a criminal act upon New Yorkers, no matter how much New Yorkers raised their voice and said, we want this, we care about this, you go do it. Pretty easy now to understand, you know, what he had at stake and why he was gatekeeping for the usual suspects.
Sure, and I discovered, you know, one step deeper when I was going through my my trial against my ex-employer, and the attorney that I was up against was this company called Skadden Arps. And I didn't realize that until after I was in trial and I was in the final phases, but Skadden Arps was created by J.P. Morgan specifically to do deals that other attorney firms weren't willing to do. And Skadden Arps, managed the Iran-Contra deal. They managed BCCI and got these guys all off the hook. And Spitzer and his wife both worked for that law firm. And so when you have these things coming full circle, and I'm realizing this, that I'm pointing out money laundering, and who does the company go to get defense? This other company that's, an attorney firm that's professionally there to obscure all these things from public view. They're also the same law firm that defends the airlines from the victims' families in 9/11. So when you have all of these things coming full circle so fast, it's a small group of elite people who just have access to information, and they're doing things that normal people on the street either can't comprehend or can't can't just believe. Their belief stops them. But if you take even one more step back, you look at BCCI, and one of the key figures in BCCI was this guy named Clark Clifford. Now, Clark Clifford, if you go back to the creation of the CIA and the OSS and National Security Act of 1947, Clark Clifford created national security, that term. And whenever that term is invoked, 90% of the time it's used to cover up the drug trafficking that is the backbone of our economy.
And AIG, of course, the allegations of them working with the CIA and smuggling dope, and it really just all fits together so nicely. I don't know why we can't just tie a bow on it and start the subpoenas and the investigations.
Well, and there's so much information that it's even hard for me to represent in this short amount of time. But this is what we've been investing our time into behind the scenes, is connecting the money laundering. If you follow the money, you find the people who did all this. Because when AIG is crumbling and it's being bought into, you know, bought up by the Federal Reserve, well, those are still the people who are behind 9/11. Those are the same people who created the currency, and that was because J.P. Morgan in the late 1800s and early 1900s bailed out this country three times, and then the people realized Wall Street has too much power. So these guys create a bank secretly, and they tell people, hey, this is federal, it has a reserve. Everyone buys into it. J.P. Morgan then creates the Council on Foreign Relations to put editors in at all the newspapers, and therefore they've controlled our media for the past 80, 90, 100 years.
It doesn't help that General Electric makes profit off of the wars that they're selling in order to continue their domination. Another connection into 9/11 with Maurice Hank Greenberg. He was deeply involved in the Chinese trade. And by Chinese trade, we pretty much mean heroin, but it means other things, too, in the 80s, where one Henry Kissinger was one of his representatives. And, of course, Henry Kissinger, they attempted to appoint him as the head of the 9/11 Commission until the Jersey Girl started asking questions about his client list in Saudi Arabia.
And I would point out that L. Paul Bremer also worked for Kissinger Associates. So these guys, it's a small clique of people who've worked together behind the scenes, and they're just doing things that are beyond public awareness. And once you put the spotlight there and explain what's going on, it might not be the sexiest information, but it follows the money, it has real SEC documents behind it, and you can get to perpetrators who were profiting from the deaths on 9/11 and the war.
Why don't you just believe in all of these coincidence theories stacked on top of each other by the millions? What's wrong with us, Richard? Why don't we just buy into all these coincidence theories and then just give up all of our freedoms and go work for a minimum wage somewhere? I mean, why aren't we just going with the program here?
Because I realize that by people invoking plausible denial, that they create an illusion. And anytime somebody's hiding or censoring a piece of information from you to keep you from figuring it out, it means they want to make you ignorant to profit from your apathy and laziness because you won't go look for yourself. And they have a maxim that says, let he who would be deceived be deceived. Meaning, if you're not smart enough to see that the three-card Monty is a shell game and you're getting taken advantage of, if you find that entertaining, they're going to keep taking your money. And that's what we really have to do, is educate ourselves, turn off the TV, start reading some books, talking to each other, and learning some things from experience directly and not from the TV, because the TV is, you know, based around profit. And profit depends on your ignorance, and that's how everything out there runs.
We got all of these names. Frank G. Wisner, Jr., board member of Kroll, currently Greenberg's deputy chairman of external affairs. His father was the founder of the CIA, who killed himself over the scandal from his being duped by British Soviet masters by Kim Philby. Frank Wisner, Jr. is a director of George Bush-linked Enron. Now we go back to Enron, and then we go back to AIG and the negotiated payments from Peru over the nationalization of Enron operations. I mean, there's a lot of things they had to cover up. They were raping. They were pillaging. They wanted to continue doing that. They found the best way to do it is to have this new Pearl Harbor. Here are all the people that benefit. Here are their names. Here are their actions. We're following their trail. I want to come back. I want to, you know, talk to Richard Grove about what happens to all of this now as this is in play. What can we do? What do we watch out for here? Richard Andrew Grove with us, just burning up the airwaves today, doing a fantastic job. 8thEstate.com. Richard Andrew Grove will also talk about the events he's about to do. Stay tuned. I'm Jack Blood. This is Deadline Live.
That's evil, man. I'm freaking out, man. Help me, man.
I'm patient of this plan, as humble as I can.
Jim Mars, the great Jim Mars, great investigative reporter, a best-selling author, coming here to Austin, Texas this Saturday, 6 o'clock at Brave New Bookstore, the physical location 1904 Guadalupe here in Austin, Texas, right across the street from UT, and coincidentally enough, right under the Chase Bank Building. It is the bunker under Chase Bank Building. Brave New Bookstore, they have all the videos, all the books that you hear about on this program. They will be streaming this PowerPoint event where Jim will also be signing a lot of his books, his newest book about the Nazification of America. Of course, has done books about false flag terror, et cetera, JFK. He's got it all. He's got all the goods. And he will be appearing at 6 o'clock this Saturday, the 20th of this month, September, at Brave New Bookstore in Austin, Texas. And if you're somewhere else, go tune in at that time to BraveNewBookstore.com. They're going to be running live feeds and live video from the event, so you can be a part of it, even if you don't live here in Austin, Texas. Go to BraveNewBookstore.com this Saturday at 6 o'clock. I believe it starts at 6:30, technically, and you can watch this entire presentation. It's almost as if you're there. While you're there, do some shopping as well. Richard Andrew Grove on the program with us today. Richard, you got a couple of benefits coming up, including my friend Adam Kokesh, who's going to be on the program tomorrow, a great revolutionist for the cause here, did an excellent job at the Ron Paul Revolution Rally up in Minnesota, really knows what he's talking about, just full of energy. He is with the Iraqi Veterans Against the War. You're doing a benefit and finding ways to benefit that group and the Feel Good Foundation by John Thiel. Quickly tell us about that, if you could.
Oh, sure. The films we've been producing this summer, there's three films we've produced. Two of them are already released. You can see them online for free, but if you want a DVD, you have to donate $50 or more to one of the soldier organizations or a first responder organization. You email us the receipt. We send you the DVD at our own cost. And what we're working on right now is a play called The Veteran Dialogues, and it's kind of a spinoff of that play, The Vagina Monologues, only it's more than one person on stage. It's communication between soldiers and a civilian audience around topics of concern, things they experienced, things they went through, and presented in such a way that the audience realizes that we're all dealing with the same things, that we all have common opposition, and as long as there's such cognitive dissonance in this country about the war, you can't get the war stopped. So our goal is to take that demographic which strongly supports the war and let them hear what soldiers are actually saying and actually going through. And to do that, I've had a writing partner over the last couple weeks named Mike Sires, who's part of IVAW and he's part of We Are Change Florida. And we wrote a screenplay for the American Zoetrope Contest based on some of the footage he shot at IVAW out in Minnesota at one of their meetings. And then he's working with me on this play. And so we're doing everything we can to both educate the public to what's really going on and, you know, to turn off their TVs and listen to these soldiers because they're dying to, to hear your, they're dying to get your attention, literally.
Yeah, literally. And, so donate $50 to IVAW or the Feel Good Foundation. Show that to Richard and his people. They'll get you a bunch of the films, copies, hard copies of the films that they make, including the film To End All War, some of the films Richard has made also, which should include some of the evidence you're hearing with the documentation to back it up. On today's program, I got to know what happens. I mean, Kroll, man, we look at Lou Palumbo, private investigator with Kroll, who has connections to the Colombia drug Medellin cartel, has connections to Shin Beth, the secret police out of Israel. I mean, these people are extremely powerful, extremely dangerous, as you've noted on the program before and today, involved in 9/11, running the security at the World Trade Center towers, probably took out John O'Neill. Who gets Kroll through this whole AIG mess? Where are they now? What are they doing today? And how are they affected by this at all? And who controls them?
Well, AIG handed off Kroll to Marsha McLennan. So now that AIG is getting in the middle of all this heat, Marsha McLennan safely keeping Kroll. And if you look up the history on Kroll, they trained the Saudi regime. They trained the Iraqis. They handled Enron after it crashed, right? So they are the go-to guys to come in and do anything because they are a private intelligence agency. And because they're privatized, Everything they do is off of the government, the public radar, because it's not going through government. There's no.
They're like Blackwater, Richard, but they're scarier, in my opinion. And they have been shielded through this AIG bailout by going under the banner of Marsha McLennan.
Absolutely. And to make a couple quick points, the article I couldn't remember the name of earlier is called Greenberg Making a Play for AIG? It's on Forbes.com. And basically Greenberg writes this letter to help and says, oh, you guys are in trouble. Can I come in and help and help to buy you guys out of trouble? And really, it looks like when Greenberg left, he left it as a poison pill for AIG to self-destruct. Yep. And then he can come in and out of the ashes, they make a new money laundering entity that's, faster, stronger, better than the old one. And if you just go back 1 second, there's a Los Angeles Times reporter named Mark Fritz, and he wrote this article entitled The Secret Insurance Agent Men. And it talks about Cornelius V. Starr, who's the founder of AIG, and these guys from the OSS going behind the scenes, bankrolling Hitler, and then bringing down his regime, right? And I think the same people that did 9/11 are the same families, at least, that funded the Holocaust and the Nazis. They're the same people that killed JFK, and now they're making a final run for power. And they're folding up shop, because when you close down AIG or Lehman Brothers, that company doesn't exist to historians in the future. You can't get those records, because when companies are merged or bought out or acquired, those records disappear. And so all these little companies, or even big companies like AIG, can be rolled up into a bigger company that you can't see into, like the Federal Reserve.
And so in the final analysis, Richard, AIG, Lehman Brothers, and of course we can lump in some of these other banking houses into this as well, Merrill Lynch, et cetera.
Citigroup, yeah.
They fell, and allegedly fell, because they're not really going to fall. Again, this is a big protection racket. We got to let our listeners understand that. They've got to know this. But it fell on purpose, not because of the Republican economy, not because of capitalism or cartel capitalism, maybe, in this case. They fell because they were designed to fall in order to, again, put out more protections, to consolidate and centralize more power with the Federal Reserve, to put out more regulations, this blueprint coming from the Treasury, which is extremely disturbing to me. I mean, they just seem to benefit no matter what they do, and the American people fall for it. They're out there going, bah, bah, you know, constantly, oh, my God, the economy is going to crash completely. We're going to be begging in the streets. We better do what we're told. These people are going to save us. The Federal Reserve, which isn't federal and has no reserves, are coming on the white horse to save us all. Let's bow down. Let's pick up their poop and put it in our pocket and then go try to buy food with it. Unfortunately, this is all design. Now, how close of a design, how much they control this is up for debate. It is controlled chaos. But the usual suspects, very, very dangerous people connected into the Council on Foreign Relations, connected into the CIA, they are the CIA, connected into mercenary groups, connected into the shadow government, are pulling these strings. And I'm so glad, Richard, you can come on today and tell people how this works.
Yeah, I just hope it helped to, you know, get people to at least look for themselves, because when you start looking into this for yourself, that's when you really get to understand. You can't understand from hearing me on the Jack Blood show or any other show, and you can't even really understand from watching one of our films. You have to actually take that and start to look for yourself and figure it out, and that's where you lose your fear and replace it with understanding, and that's when people will listen to you, when you're not coming to them like the sky is falling, but you're coming to him and saying, there's a problem, but I have a solution, and we just need to get together and collaborate.
That is the natural thing, especially American patriots and the patriot movements and the truth movements. Their first reaction is, oh, my God, the sky is falling. The world's going to end. And people seem to really buy into that fear. And what we've been trying to do is alleviate that fear with the power of knowledge. So by knowing these things, we are free. By knowing where the problem is coming from and who's responsible, giving out their names on this broadcast, Richard, we are able to protect ourselves if we have the guts, if we have the fortitude, if we have even the patriotism, dare I say, to do it.
Ignorance is just regret waiting to happen, so get active.
Hey, man, excellent job on the show today. Your website, 8TheState. You can say it that way, or 8TheState. What does that mean exactly, Richard?
It's the state of infinity that is the state of divinity. It's peace.
Vote with your dollars. The truth is out there, but you must realize it. You must understand it. You must grasp it. You must not be afraid of it. Richard Andrew Grove, excellent job today. Folks, go donate to these organizations and get all of the information for yourself. Tomorrow on the program, Adam Kokesh will join us. I think Jim Mars might drop in. Should be a good show for a Friday. I hope you all tune in. Thanks again, Richard. Really appreciate it. I'll talk to you later, brother.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
That wraps up another edition of Deadline Live. Thank you so much for joining us, folks. Get out, especially the second hour, man. Get it out to people. Let people hear this. Let them study this for themselves. Let them use their common sense. Let them use that third eye, whatever it takes, to understand what's going on. I think it will alleviate a lot of the fear that we have. This is all just uncontrolled. This is all just accidental. This is all just coincidental. This is all just massive incompetence, and there's no solution. When we know the truth will set us free. Folks, as always, I'm Jack Blood saying be bold. Be bold as love, and mighty forces will come to your aid. I'll see you tomorrow.